long stride, but by and large he fit into the underground life of Moonbase quite smoothly. Until he ran into the linear football game. It was almost midnight. Although most of the offices and labs were closed for the night, the tunnels remained as brightly lit as always. Doug had spent the evening in the workshop that Foster Brennard had converted into his office, going over details of the expedition. Brennard was a stickler for detail. He seemed to know every part and piece and item of equipment that had been assembled for the trek to the South Pole. He could account for every gram of food, oxygen, water, even the aluminum chips that were used as fuel for the expedition's rocket craft. Doug was determined that he would know as much about the expedition as Brennard did, especially the people. He copied all the personnel files, and now, carrying the microdiscs in his coverall pockets, he was heading for his own quarters and some sleep before setting out to meet each person slated to go on the expedition. He heard shouting from down the tunnel. And scuffling. A fight? The tunnels curved slightly and had emergency airtight hatches every 20 yards that remained open unless the sensors detected a drop in air pressure. Stepping through one of the open hatches, Doug jogged along the tunnel until he saw a half dozen men and women tussling, pushing, kicking, and laughing.
"Out of the way, tenderfoot!"
one of the group hollered as he kicked a small round object in Doug's direction. It was flat and black like a hockey puck. As it skittered toward him, Paul saw that it was the plastic top from a container. It bounced off a wall, and the whole gang of men and women raced after it.
"Watch out!"
yelled a young Asian woman, short and stocky, grinning toothily. The commotion boiled right into Doug. They were all young people, he saw, not much more than his own age. The coveralls they wore were mostly the pumpkin orange of the science and exploration group, although there was a medical white and even a management blue among them, the same as Doug's own jumpsuit. One of the guys brushed past him, pushing him into the rock wall.
"Linear football!"
the young woman gasped by way of explanation. Then they were past him, kicking the black plastic lid down the corridor. Doug trotted after them. The game seemed to have no rules. Everybody tried to kick the lid. They all scrambled to reach it, pushing and elbowing and laughing every inch of the way. Somebody kicked it into the slight niche of a doorway, and they all whooped wildly. In an instant, though, the game continued down the tunnel. Doug followed them, and before he knew it, he was part of the game, too. It became obvious that the object was to kick the lid into a doorway. There were no teams, though. It was all against each, and the scorekeeping was casual at best.
"That's 8 for me."
"The hell it is."
"You've only got 6.
"No, 8.
"What's the difference? Are we playing or doing arithmetic?"
The tunnel ended at the closed hatch that led into the main garage, where the surface tractors were stored and serviced. The 6 men and women collapsed against the walls and slid to the floor, panting, sweating, all grins. Doug sank into a crouch with them.
"You're Doug Stavanger, aren't you?"
asked the Asian woman. He nodded, trying to catch his breath. One of the young men puffed.
"For a tenderfoot, you run pretty good."
Doug said, "Thanks." After a few minutes, one of the women said,
"Hey, it's past midnight already. I've got to be on the job at 0800.
"That's where you sleep, isn't it?
A comedian yet?"
Slowly, laboriously, they clambered to their feet and started trudging back toward the living quarters.
"I'm Bianca Ree,"
the Asian woman said. Built like a fireplug, she barely came up to Doug's shoulder.
"The brilliant and beautiful Eurasian astrophysicist."
Doug must have gaped at her because she laughed out loud. Soon they were talking like old friends as they walked along the tunnel.
"Doesn't anybody complain about the noise you guys make?"
Doug asked. "People are sleeping on the other side of some of those doors."
"Oh, we wake them up, I guess, but the game moves past them so fast that by the time they're really awake, we move down the tunnel."
"Nobody's ever complained?"
"Oh, sure. But we don't get up a game every night."
They walked in silence for a while.
"You're an astrophysicist, you said?"
Bianca nodded. She had often used that beautiful Eurasian line to see what kind of reaction it would cause. In truth, her beauty was not physical. Short, thick-waisted, with a face as round and flat as a pie pan, Bianca was the daughter of a Korean-American father and Italian-American mother. She claimed that she grew up on sushi parmigiana.
She was bored with the astronomical work she was doing at Moonbase. It was strictly routine photometry, using the wide-field Schmidt telescope to make painstakingly accurate measurements of the positions of galaxies, adding another decimal point or two to the details. The kind of work that they stick graduate students with, while the major players get to do the exciting stuff like scoping out black holes in galactic cores or searching for extraterrestrial intelligence. Her work was so routine that she had set up a computer program to run the telescope and catalog the results, and began to spend her time calculating how to build a giant telescope using liquid mercury for its mirror, and, when she was sure no one else could see her, practicing ballet in the low lunar gravity. But suddenly, with Douglas Stavanger walking beside her, she got another idea. "You know," she said, "I could use your help."
"Mine?"
"I'd like to come along on Brennard's expedition." Doug stopped walking and looked at her.
"Why?" he asked.
"Why should Brennard take an astrophysicist along? What good would that do for the expedition? Or for you, for that matter?"
Bianca answered with one word. "Farside."
Before she could start to explain, he said, "You want to set up an astronomical observatory on the far side, and the expedition to the South Pole can be a sort of training mission, is that it?"
"Exactly."
She was impressed with how quickly he grasped the idea. With a slow grin, Doug went on, "That's a pretty flimsy excuse, don't you think?"
"Damn," she thought,
"he sees right through me." But she found herself grinning back and admitting, "True, but it's the only one I could think of." By the time they reached her door, Doug had promised he would speak to Brennard about her. Bianca wanted to kiss him, but decided it was too soon for that. Sternly, she reminded herself that this good-looking young man was 5 years her junior. She also remembered that men attained the peak of their sexual potency around the age of 18. Doug did not seem to have any romantic intentions, so they merely shook hands, and then he headed down the tunnel toward his own quarters. She dreamed about him that night. She dreamed she was a slender and graceful ballerina, and he was hopelessly in love with her. Almost everyone in Moonbase wore utilitarian coveralls with name tags pinned to their chests. Yet even though Brennard wore a one-piece jumpsuit just as most others did, he needed no name tag. Although he belonged to the exploration and research group, he insisted on wearing pure white coveralls, clean and crisp as if they had just been laundered and pressed, and decorated with shoulder patches and chest emblems from the dozens of missions he had undertaken during his years as an astronaut and lunar explorer. Doug Stavanger did not consciously think of Brennard as a father figure, but the older man's single-minded drive to establish a working base in the South Polar region of the moon impressed Doug forcefully. "Do you really think Yamagata is planning an expedition to Aitken Basin too?" Doug asked.
"No doubt in my mind about that," said Brennard in his sweet tenor voice. "They'd be damn fools not to."
It was the morning after the football game and Doug's meeting Bianca Ree. He and Brennard were hunched over a display table in Brennard's workshop office, studying the latest satellite photos of the Mount Wasser area.
"After all," Brennard went on, "we're going out there, aren't we? The Japanese are just as smart as we are. That's why we've got to get there first. Like the man said, the side that wins is the one that gets there firstest with the mostest."
Doug nodded as he straightened up. Brennard's office was one of the largest rooms in Moonbase, but it still felt hot and cramped. Most of the equipment that jammed the office was already crated and ready to be loaded on the ballistic lobbers. Doug saw a rumpled cot in one corner and realized that Brennard was sleeping in this room, too. Brennard tapped the satellite display with a fingernail.
"This is where we'll put down, right here at the foot of the mountain, close as lovers in a spacesuit built for two."
Doug looked down again.
"It's hard to make out details of that area. It's too heavily shadowed."
"It's an ice field," Brennard said. Doug stepped over to the end of the table and worked the keyboard. False color infrared imagery of the region appeared over the satellite picture.
"Not ice," he murmured. "The spectrographic data show anorthosite rock. Typical Highlands profile."
Brennard straightened up and stretched his arms over his head. His hands bumped the smooth rock ceiling. Been coming up here more than 20 years, and I still can't get used to how low the ceilings are, he muttered.